Imagine reading through a really dense multi-billion-dollar corporate filing. We are talking hundreds of pages of legal jargon, financial projections.
Yeah, the exact kind of document that usually cures insomnia.
Exactly right. And as you are scanning the pages, you realize that a single missing word, a word that has been prominently featured in literally every previous report for years, has just been surgically removed.
And that erasure, it isn't a typo.
No, not at all.
It is, for all intents and purposes, a declaration of war on an entire sector of the tech industry.
Okay, let's unpack this right out of the gate. Welcome to the Deep Dive, everyone.
Glad to be here.
Today, we are looking at Sony's explosive June 2026 SEC Business Strategy Report. And that single missing word we mentioned, PC.
Right, just completely gone.
We are tracking how the newly appointed PlayStation leadership duo, Herman Hulst and Hideaki Nishino, have entirely wiped the personal computer from their single-player release roadmap. They're basically tearing up the previous playbook.
Yeah, fundamentally rewriting the rules of the entire gaming economy.
And for you listening, whether you are, actively trying to figure out if you should drop $1,000 on a new graphics card, or you just follow cutthroat corporate strategy, this document reveals how one massive company is aggressively, unapologetically rebuilding its walled garden.
It really is the corporate equivalent of a silent alarm going off. We have to look at the regime change to understand the magnitude of this pivot.
Right, the previous CEO, Jim Ryan.
Exactly. He operated under a philosophy of expansion. For several fiscal years, if you dug into Sony Interactive Entertainment's SEC filings, there was always this reassuring boilerplate clause.
Yeah, I remember reading those.
Right. It explicitly stated that Sony was committed to rolling out first-party titles to multiple platforms like PC, basically to expand their audience. I mean, it was a core pillar of their public-facing strategy.
It was printed in black and white. And Wall Street analysts, along with outlets like IGN and Eurogamer, immediately noticed that in this new June 2026 report, that clause is just gone, completely expunged.
The roots.
So why pull the emergency brake on PC ports? Because, I mean, from an outsider's perspective, packaging up a game you already made and throwing it onto a massive storefront like Steam feels like printing free money.
It definitely felt like a masterstroke of revenue diversification at the very beginning. That initial taste of success was kind of the lure of the Jim Ryan strategy.
When games like Horizon Zero Dawn came over,
It's
remember?
right, yeah, Horizon and the 2018 God of War reboot on Steam. The financial momentum was explosive. Sony saw massive sales from a completely untapped demographic. But, well, the brutal reality of game development slowly caught up with them.
How so?
PC porting is an unforgiving game of mathematics and diminishing returns.
Let's get into the mechanics of that math. Because making a game run on a PlayStation seems fundamentally different than making it run on the, I don't know, infinite combinations of PC hardware out in the wild.
You hit the nail on the head. To make a game run on a PlayStation 5, your engineers are optimizing the code for one exact, unchangeable combination of AMD silicon and memory.
It's a closed loop.
Right. Taking that highly specialized proprietary engine and ruthlessly optimizing it for literally thousands of different PC configurations is a nightmare.
I can imagine.
You have to account for someone running a brand new NVIDIA 4090 graphics card, someone else running a 7-year-old Intel processor, different RAM
It's
speeds.
your motherboard architectures.
Exactly. It becomes an exponential geometry problem of quality assurance. And the production costs associated with that are just astronomical.
And on top of bearing that massive cost, you are selling to an incredibly savvy PC gaming audience.
Yeah.
I mean, they were looking at these Sony games, which were often a couple of years old by the time they finally landed on PC, and refusing to pay a full $60 or $70.
Yeah, so your profit margins are eroding from both ends. You have ballooning production costs to make the port functional, and a consumer base that demands a steep discount because the game isn't brand new.
And then there were the technical disasters.
Oh, man. The Last of Us Part 1 is the textbook example here. It launched on PC with severe memory leak issues, stuttering frame rates. It hit mixed reviews on Steam.
Which is crazy for a crown jewel franchise like Naughty Dog's.
Devastating. The reputational damage was immense, and the port vastly underperformed its internal sales projections.
I look at it through the lens of pop culture relevance. Even when the ports functioned perfectly on a technical level, there was a massive issue the report identifies as delayed port fatigue.
Right.
Games like Horizon Forbidden West arrived on PC over 2 years after their initial debut. And 2 years is an eternity in gaming.
It really is.
By the time it hits your Steam library, you already know the plot twists. You've seen the memes on Twitter. The cultural zeitgeist has completely evaporated, so the organic marketing hype is zero.
That evaporation of hype is deadly. PC gamers had moved on to newer native PC titles that were driving the conversation today, not the conversation from 2 years ago.
It makes me think of like a luxury restaurant selling their signature recipe to a frozen food company a year later.
Oh, that's a good comparison.
You know, you might get a quick burst of cash from the grocery store aisles when the frozen version launches. But you are actively training your most loyal customers that they don't actually need to book a table at your restaurant anymore. They can just sit on the couch and wait.
That is a brilliant way to frame it. And Sony's internal telemetry data proved that exact phenomenon was happening.
Really?
Yeah. They saw a terrifying trend emerging in the data. A significant percentage of potential PS5 buyers were outright canceling their console purchases.
Wow.
These consumers realized that the major narrative exclusives would eventually arrive on PC, so they decided to hold onto their cash, upgrade their desktop graphics cards, and just wait it out.
So the porting strategy wasn't just yielding diminishing returns, it was actively sabotaging hardware adoption.
Exactly.
Which sabotages the very foundation of their entire business model. Let's talk about the bottom line here. Why is selling a copy of a game on PC so much worse for Sony's bank account than selling that exact same game natively on a PlayStation?
Well, we can follow the money on a standard $60 Steam sale. Right off the bat, Valve, the company that owns Steam, takes their industry standard 30% cut.
Right.
So Sony is left with a net profit of $42. In a vacuum, $42 is fine. But you have to compare that to the lifetime value, the LTV of a dedicated console player.
Because when I buy a console, I am not just buying a box to play one game. I am moving into your neighborhood.
You are moving in and you are paying rent every single day. A dedicated PlayStation user buys the $500 console. Then they realize they want to play couch co-op, so they buy a second DualSense controller.
Then they want surround sound, so they grab the Pulse 3D headset.
Exactly. They subscribe to the PS Plus Premium Online service for 7 years. And crucially, they purchase dozens of third-party titles from the PlayStation Store games made by other companies like Electronic Arts or Ubisoft.
It only takes a cut of those two, right?
A 30% toll booth cut of every single one of those third-party transactions, simply because the transaction happened on their hardware.
So the goal isn't really to sell me a game. The goal is to become the infrastructure I use to buy everything else.
Yes. When you crunch those numbers, the lifetime value of a console player dwarfs a PC port purchaser by a factor of 10.
10. Wow.
Yeah. The Jim Ryan strategy chased short-term revenue spikes on PC, but it came at the perilous expense of the long-term health of the PlayStation ecosystem.
Okay, so if selling games on PC destroys the lifetime value of the customer, what is the countermove? How does the new leadership, how does Herman Hulst plan to keep players locked into a $500 piece of plastic when they could just build a PC?
The new strategy is built around a concept Hulst calls platform stickiness. We have to remember an ironclad law of the console industry. The physical hardware is frequently sold at a loss, especially early in a console's life cycle.
Right. They lose money on the box.
Exactly. The profit exclusively comes from the software ecosystem. But to get people to enter that ecosystem, you need what the industry calls a system seller.
Those are the heavy hitters, the cinematic masterpieces from studios like Santa Monica or Insomniac. Games you literally cannot experience anywhere else.
Precisely. Without those exclusive, industry-defining narratives, the PS5 is just an underpowered, proprietary computer. By intentionally cutting off the PC pipeline, Sony is injecting vital scarcity back into the PlayStation-only brand identity.
Making leaving the ecosystem unthinkable.
That's the entire objective of platform stickiness.
But, you know, I see a massive contradiction in this strategy when I look at their recent corporate acquisitions. Let's talk about Nixxis software.
Oh, this is a great point.
Sony acquired Nixxis in 2021, and their entire reputation in the industry, like their sole mandate, was being the absolute gold standard for porting complex PlayStation architecture to PC.
They are the wizards who made Spider-Man Remastered run flawlessly on desktop computers.
Exactly. So if Sony is actively killing single-player PC ports, what happens to the elite PC developers they just spent millions buying?
What's fascinating here is how Sony has aggressively reallocated that talent pool. With the single-player PC port mandate nullified, Nixxis isn't chasing PC compatibility anymore.
What are they doing?
Instead, they have been fully reintegrated into the core internal first-party development pipeline.
Wait, so what are PC porting specialists doing on an internal console pipeline?
Well, Nixxis possesses a profound understanding of low-level API optimization.
Hold on, let's pause there. For those of us who aren't software engineers, what is a low-level API, and why does a game developer care about it?
Good question. Think of an API and application programming interface as a translator between the game's code and the actual physical graphics card. Usually, developers have to speak a slow, generic language so that thousands of different graphics cards can understand the instructions.
Okay, that makes sense.
Low-level APIs like DirectX 12 Ultimate or Vulkan allow developers to bypass that generic translator and speak directly to the raw silicon of the GPU. It is incredibly complex, but it unlocks massive performance gains. Nixxis engineers are masters at this direct communication.
Wait, so instead of trying to make PlayStation games run on 1,000 different PCs, they're using their best PC mechanics to build an absolute super console.
Exactly. They are turning them inward. They're using those skills to squeeze every last drop of power out of the PS5 Pro and likely laying the foundational software architecture for the PlayStation 6.
Slashing production overhead at the source.
Yeah. Instead of relying on secondary PC sales to recoup bloated budgets, they are using elite optimization to drastically lower the actual cost of production. This ensures that every native PS5 sale yields a significantly higher profit margin.
That structural pivot makes a lot of sense, but, I mean, it brings us to a terrifying wall. We just established that Sony needs to make their native console games more profitable by lowering production costs.
Right.
How on earth do they achieve that when modern AAA games cost an absolute fortune to make?
The development budgets are hurling toward a financial precipice. If you look at the historical trajectory back in the PlayStation 3 era, a flagship title might cost around $40 million to produce.
Okay.
Fast forward a few years to the PS4 era, and that figure ballooned to $100 million.
Which already sounds like summer blockbuster movie money.
But today, in the current PS5 ecosystem, the baseline entry for a premium system-selling narrative experience routinely exceeds $250 million.
That is insane.
Marvel's Spider-Man 2 eclipsed the $315 million mark. And these games take 6 or 7 years to develop from concept to launch.
So a single studio might only release one game during an entire console generation. That is entirely unsustainable. One flop, one game that fails to resonate, and a studio with 500 employees goes bankrupt.
Without radical intervention, the industry was going to collapse under its own weight. And that brings us to the most disruptive revelation in Sony's 2026 SEC filing.
Which is?
It details a massive systemic injection of generative artificial intelligence across every single stage of the software development lifecycle.
Now, when most of us hear AI in gaming right now, we think of something like PSSR-like, the upscaling technology in the PS5 Pro.
Right, making things look prettier.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Using AI to take a 1080p image and make it look like flawless 4K without melting the graphics card is a neat visual trick. But reading this filing, this sounds exponentially deeper than just making the picture look sharper.
It is a fundamental rewiring of how a game is built. Leaked internal documentation shows Sony integrating three distinct, incredibly powerful AI modules directly into their proprietary development engines, like Gorilla's Decima engine.
Okay, let's break those down.
The first pillar they outline is IPCG, Intelligent Procedural Content Generation.
Now, how does intelligent generation differ from the procedural generation we've seen for decades? I mean, games like No Man's Sky or classic roguelikes have been randomly generating infinite maps for years.
Older procedural systems essentially use random mathematical seeds to haphazardly scatter assets across a map. It's like throwing a handful of digital Lego bricks on the floor and calling it a level.
Right.
IPCG is entirely different. It acts like a simulation. You plant a digital seed, and the algorithm actually understands geological erosion, biome blending, and natural ecosystem distribution.
Oh, wow.
It essentially simulates 10,000 years of rain within the game engine to see exactly where rivers would naturally carve valleys, and then it intelligently places the specific types of trees where the water would have logically pooled.
Wait, really? So human environment artists aren't wasting 6 months meticulously handcrafting individual rocks or, you know, planting digital ferns and placing background vehicles?
Exactly. The machine simulates the canvas, and the human director steps in to paint the masterpiece, focusing only on bespoke art direction and the actual gameplay loop.
That has to shave years off the initial world-building phase.
It does. But once you have that massive, beautifully generated world, you have to populate it with characters and dialogue. And that leads to the second major AI bottleneck they're solving,
which is
smart localization pipelines. Historically, to ensure global market penetration, Sony had to localize thousands of lines of dialogue into over 15 distinct languages.
I can't even imagine the logistics of that. I mean, you are booking hundreds of recording studios all over the world, hiring armies of international voice actors.
And then you have to manually adjust the 3D facial animations of the characters so their lips match the phonetics of Japanese versus French versus Spanish.
Oh, right, because the mouth movements would look completely off otherwise.
The overhead was staggering. The new AI integration utilizes NERVIFS to bypass this almost entirely.
Okay, let's establish another baseline here. What exactly is a NERF and how does it change localization?
NERF stands for Neural Radiance Field. Instead of manually animating a 3D face frame by frame, you train a neural network on a set of 2D images of a face from multiple angles. The AI then synthesizes a fully volumetric, completely malleable 3D scene. What Sony is doing is using this tech to perform real-time translation of the primary English audio track.
Seriously?
Yeah. The system instantly translates the dialogue into French, generates a highly emotive, synthesized vocal performance, and then dynamically warps the 3D character's mouth to perfectly match the French phones in real time.
So they essentially eliminate the need to hire hundreds of international actors, and they shave months off the post-production localization schedule.
Exactly.
But, you know, if you connect these dots, a terrifying problem emerges. You have an AI rapidly generating a massive, highly detailed world, and another AI populating it with localized characters instantly.
Right.
You are building a game so fast and so vast that it must be absolutely riddled with game-breaking bugs. How do human testers possibly QA a world that big?
And you've identified the exact reason for the third pillar RLQA, or Reinforcement Learning Quality Assurance.
How does that work?
Traditional QA is grueling work. It involves hundreds of human testers literally throwing their digital characters against invisible walls for 8 hours a day, just hoping to trigger a glitch.
Right.
Sony is now deploying reinforcement learning bots that run 2047 in massive virtual server farms.
Now, reinforcement learning means the bots are essentially trained to seek a reward, right? So they are actively rewarded by the system for breaking the game.
Yes. They autonomously swarm the code, hunting for out-of-bounds glitches, physics engine anomalies, and memory leaks.
That's wild.
And the most advanced aspect of this isn't just finding the bugs. In many instances, the AI analyzes the physics anomaly, proactively suggests the underlying code fix, and submits an automated pull request directly to the engineering team.
No way.
The patch is literally sitting on the lead programmer's desk before they even log in for the morning with their coffee.
So the machine finds that is wild. I have to imagine, though, reading through this absolute automation of the development cycle, there is deep anxiety among actual game developers about being replaced by server farms.
Oh, absolutely. Hideaki Nishino, the president of Platform Experience, had to address this directly to quell internal panic.
What does he say?
He stated forcefully that their mandate is not to replace human creativity with a machine. The objective is to construct a sustainable infrastructure where studios aren't paralyzed by the sheer terror of time and money.
That makes sense.
He referred to AI as the liberator of the creative mind, arguing that if you automate the excruciating minutiae of digital asset management, directors can focus entirely on storytelling.
So they are slashing budgets with AI, and they have completely locked down their prestige single-player narratives to the PlayStation 5 and the upcoming PS6. But just when you think Sony has completely boarded up the windows and locked the doors to the ecosystem, there is one massive, glaring exception buried in this report.
It really is a fascinating pivot that initially seems counterintuitive to everything we've just discussed.
Here's where it gets really interesting. The report explicitly guarantees that live service and multiplayer games, you know, upcoming massive projects from Bungie like Marathon or titles like Conquered, will absolutely continue to launch day one simultaneously on both PlayStation 5 and PC.
Right.
Why guard a single-player narrative game like Wolverine or Ghost of Yutei so fiercely with a walled garden, but leave the back door wide open and essentially give away your multiplayer games to the PC crowd?
It entirely comes down to the unforgiving economics of multiplayer ecosystems. Look at the unprecedented success of Arrowhead's Helldivers 2 earlier in the console cycle.
That was huge.
It completely obliterated Sony's internal sales records for a first-party game, and it did so specifically because it launched on PC and PS5 at the exact same moment.
Because it's a sheer numbers game. I mean, a single-player narrative can sit on a store shelf for a year, and you can play it at your own pace.
Yeah.
A multiplayer game without a million players logging in during week one is a ghost town.
Online games require a critical mass of concurrent users to survive that crucial launch window. If you artificially restrict a live service game to a single piece of hardware, you are guaranteeing a slow death.
Right, the matchmaking queues get too long.
Players get frustrated and leave, the community stagnates, and the game enters an unrecoverable death spiral. You simply cannot build a pervasive, decade-long multiplayer project without tapping into the massive PC demographic. It would be economic suicide.
So if you look at the corporate structure, Sony is effectively operating two distinct, totally separate businesses under one roof now.
Yeah, on one side of the building, they are a premium walled garden console manufacturer dedicated to prestige narrative art. If you want to experience the next generational leap in The Last of Us, you are required to buy a PlayStation.
And the other side.
On the other side of the building, they are acting as a massive platform agnostic third party publisher for pervasive online games that rely on microtransactions and battle passes where PC players are warmly welcomed.
With this dual strategy laid bare, we have to look at what this means for the rest of the tech world, and specifically for you, the listener tuning in right now.
Absolutely.
Because Sony, pulling their premium games out of the PC ecosystem, doesn't happen in a vacuum. It feels like this is going to send violent shockwaves through the hardware manufacturing industry.
It is a devastating blow to PC hardware manufacturers like NVIDIA, AMD, and Intel.
Right. If you are sitting on a $1,200 GPU, and you know the best narrative games in the world are permanently locked behind a PlayStation 6, why are you ever upgrading that PC component again?
The entire marketing allure of upgrading a graphics card is inextricably tied to playing generation-defining, graphically intensive blockbuster titles.
Exactly.
If a measurable segment of consumers realizes they literally cannot play the biggest cultural touchstones of the decade on their custom-built rig, they might redirect that discretionary income right back into the closed PlayStation ecosystem.
And it sets up a fascinating, completely polarized war with Microsoft. Because the Xbox division has spent the last decade doing the exact opposite of this SEC filing.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, Microsoft has been painstakingly dismantling its ecosystem walls piece by piece.
Yeah, they've been opening everything up.
They relentlessly push the Xbox Play Anywhere initiative, launching titles simultaneously on Xbox Series consoles, PC storefronts, and cloud streaming services. It is a wildly pro-consumer strategy regarding ubiquitous accessibility.
But Sony's aggressive return to artificial scarcity presents a stark contrast in perceived value. I mean, if I have a limited entertainment budget and I can only afford to buy one piece of plastic,
right,
and I know Xbox games are going to be available on the PC I already own for work anyway, but the PlayStation is the singular exclusive gateway to Naughty Dog and Santa Monica Studios.
Yeah.
The PlayStation becomes the infinitely more attractive, necessary investment.
And Sony is absolutely going to leverage the massive profitability of that walled garden to secure huge third-party exclusivity deals, further starving the competition.
We are talking about wielding their market dominance to lock down studios like Square Enix with the Final Fantasy Legacy or From Software.
Yes.
If Sony uses this momentum to starve Xbox and PC of those vital third-party titles, the walls of the garden just get higher and higher.
It is a calculated return to the uncompromising cutthroat strategies that secured their utter dominance during the PS1 and PS2 eras. To rule the industry as an undisputed monarch, you simply never loan your crown to competing platforms.
Bringing it all together for you listening, the era of patiently waiting for a PC port of the next big Sony narrative game is officially over.
It's done.
If there are existing ports out there in your Steam library right now, games like God of War, Ragnarok, or Spider-Man, they are safe. They will stay on Steam and continue to be supported. But do not hold your breath for the next Naughty Dog masterpiece to ever run natively on your desktop.
The true uncompromising console exclusive is back with a vengeance.
And your future hardware buying choices just became a lot starker.
And that leaves us with one final, deeply unsettling question to ponder as the strategy unfolds.
What's that?
Sony is placing a monumental bet here. They are betting billions of dollars that premium exclusive art will always triumph over ubiquitous pro-consumer accessibility. They have the internal LTV math to back it up.
Right.
But if this monopolistic hardware locking strategy proves to be the absolute most lucrative financial model in the entertainment industry, what happens to the rest of the digital landscape.
Oh, wow.
Will we soon see other digital media giants reverse their own play anywhere strategies? Imagine a near future where Disney or Netflix realize the ultimate profit isn't in selling a $15 subscription that works on every smart TV and iPad.
Oh, no.
Imagine a world where they require you to buy their proprietary physical hardware box just to experience the next Avengers movie or the final season of their biggest show.
That is a deeply ominous thought to leave off on. We went from noticing a single missing word in a dry corporate document to staring down the potential future of how we are forced to consume all of our digital media.
It's a brave new world out there.
It really is. Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Bring your next stack of sources, and we will see you back here for another exploration soon.